This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com, Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, and the crew, the MGO Blog Roundtable crew is back. Glad that the fellas are joining us again this week, starting with the man that started it all over on MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, how are you this morning, my friend?
Bored?
Hey, man. I want to be bored. See, because if I'm bored, that means we aren't covering this Harbaugh scuttlebutt.
Yeah, we didn't cover any basketball games. It's just like there's nothing going on. Like, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, I wish we were talking about Jim Harbaugh. Is he going to leave or is he going to stay? But that continues to be the conversation, albeit one that I think continues to skew more and more towards him staying. Seth Fisher is with us as well. Seth, how are you this morning?
Very parental. The COVID's been washing through all the schools here, which means the kids get squeezed back home. So we've been safe. Had a lot of testing though. So a lot of testing and a lot of play time.
Yeah, man. Well, continue good health, my friend, for you and your family and all of you out there. Hopefully that can be the case. And Craig Ross, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. I can attest to Brian's ennui because he sent me a sequence of emails dissing Neanderthals the last week. He's like the Rudolph Virchow of sports talk radio and of sports journalism, complaining that really Neanderthals were only deformed Cossacks and not Neanderthals at all. And I, as a person with a lot of Neanderthal blood, I'm quite,
That is rough talk around Michigan, man. We Milford Wolpoff like taught at Michigan, like the guy who stands up for Neanderthals in that world. Which, yes, by the way, I am a nerd about this stuff, and I will get into it if you want me to. But yeah, right, Milford Wolpoff and Rachel Jafari taught at Michigan.
Sam, I just want you to know that I have no idea what either of these people are talking about.
We are the Neanderthals. We are the pro-Neanderthal school.
I thought this was some reference to an email you were sending about Illinois fans or something.
No, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't want to know. We can have the show together and then they can just do whatever they're doing.
We are the multi-regionalism school, not the out of Africa school, okay? Let's be Michigan.
Yeah. Well, look, you would think that there are some Neanderthals in Champaign and East Lansing. Not so much West Lafayette. In a response to those postponed games, not canceled games, but postponed games. Oh, you're ducking us because you got there's no cousin. We'll come to that shortly. I got to get you guys' take on the biggest news this week, or the biggest news story, or the ongoing saga with Jim Harbaugh. Now, I've been, I've already mentioned my opinion here that I think with each passing day, it becomes more and more likely, it becomes increasingly likely that he will return. A lot of signs pointing in that direction. It's not totally settled. No announcement has been made, but I'm curious how each of you guys feel about the prospects of Jim Harbaugh returning, starting with you, Craig.
Well, I don't, I have no specific information, but my instinct is he's coming back, and that's fine with me. If he doesn't want to be here, then I'm happy for him to take a job that he feels like, meets whatever his needs are better. I would like Ward Manuel, if Harbaugh does leave, to leave the current staff as intact as possible. And if that means hiring an interim coach from the current staff, or if it means hiring someone who's willing to say, I'll keep the current staff, either one of those works for me. That's my primary concern, is that this staff stays as intact as possible. And my secondary concern is, who's the head coach? That may be a minority view, but that's my view.
Seth?
I think fear of losing something is a very strong emotion in people. And, you know, that if Harbaugh wants to go, it's because last year, 1 year ago today, we were, you know, we're in a position where it's like, okay, you just went 2-4. We're not sure if this is working. You haven't beaten Ohio State. And he got a contract that reflected that. And if he had other opportunities at that time, Michigan pretty much left the door open. Like, I think I used the phrase, they put him on waivers last year and he passed, right? Like, the NFL had an opportunity to take him last year and turned him down. 1 year later, he's beaten Ohio State. He won the Big Ten. He took them to the playoffs. His value is a little higher and he's on a contract. And I think there might be more to it. This is just me guessing. I don't have, as far as insider stuff, I just told people to go listen to you. But my guess is that, you know, he lost some power in the process, that there was a little bit of de-recruiting of Jim Harbaugh from the savior who came back in 2015, and we were all clinking glasses and saying Harbaugh, to now it's like, well, you're the coach of Michigan, but Michigan has these things that we do, and this is what Michigan does. Michigan wants these people. And I don't know if he had as much control. I mean, he still probably gets to hire people or whatnot, right? But, like, I don't know if he has the feeling of control and the feeling like he's the toast of the town like he was before. And if some NFL team wants to make him the toast of the town, if Oakland, I'm sorry, Las Vegas, I'm still going to do that. But if Las Vegas wants to come around, you know, the Davis family loves Harbaugh. They're known for bold moves. If they're going, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be them, because they want to make a splash, right? And part of that splash is going to be like, Jim, you are going to be the head coach, you're going to be the general manager, you're going to be the grand poobah, we're going to make you emperor of football for life in 2 weeks, and that you're going to be our guy. And he'd take that kind of thing because that's more love than he's getting here. But I don't think Harbaugh is about the money, and I don't think Harbaugh is wants to leave Michigan in the lurch. Like, he's still a big Michigan guy. So my guess is he stays. My guess is that the Raiders aren't going to make him an offer that is like that. But if they do, yeah, there's a threat.
Brian Cook.
Well, I mean, I kind of think it'd be fun if he went and Michigan hired Luke Fickell.
Didn't someone say he has a tattoo, like the Buckeyes on his arm? Like,
yeah, but like Brett Bielema has like a Hawkeye tattoo on his body, and he coached Wisconsin, so. You know, I think, you know, just for the lulls, that's the ideal scenario, probably, just to blow everybody's mind a couple of times. But, you know, the thing about Harbaugh's NFL tenure is it ended immediately after he took the 49ers. Well, not immediately, but the year after he took the 49ers to the NFC Championship game. And the next year they had a bunch of injuries. They fell off to about 500. And that was enough for San Francisco to be like, no. And Trent Baalke is not smart. He's not a good person to have in your organization. I mean, just look at everything he's ever done. But I do think that if you had a coach who had the success that Harbaugh had for 4 years, and he was not just the biggest pain in your ass that you could possibly imagine, you know, he's not getting axed in San Francisco after that season. So I think there's a lot of hurdles that Harbaugh has to overcome because of his personality that are more workable on the college level. And if an NFL team wants to make a run at him, I guess they think that they're set up for immediate success, because it doesn't seem like Jim Harbaugh is going to be like his brother, where he's just an institution with the Ravens, right? It's like 3 or 4 years and then he's moving on somewhere else. So if Harbaugh wasn't Harbaugh, if he wasn't weird, I would say this isn't going to happen, because he like lives next to his dad and his kid goes to school at the school he went to and all this stuff that would make someone else almost impossible to pry out of this job. But Jim Harbaugh is eccentric, and Jim Harbaugh makes some decisions kind of on the fly. And so I'm not going to rule it out, but it does kind of seem unlikely from both directions, because
The NFL would have to be okay with this is going to be a short tenure that will hopefully be successful, and Harbaugh would have to be okay uprooting, you know, young children and his dad and all that stuff.
So I get, I mean, first of all, Jim Harbaugh's name is like, it's a gold mine for clicks. You mentioned Jim Harbaugh and it's like, cha-ching, right? So I get, that's one reason why you see his name mentioned with every opening. But then there's the track record for success. Every place he's been, he's turned it around. San Diego, Stanford, San Francisco, Michigan. They were all losing programs. He fixed them. He turned them around like that. And of course, this past this season that he just came off of makes it really appealing. He's been to a Super Bowl. That resume is one that would make you think that he is the guy that every NFL team is going to want. But I'm just telling you, I'm going to repeat what I said yesterday and again this morning. I don't sense the mutual interest, Jim Harbaugh's interest in leaving Michigan or the NFL's interest in trying to lure him away. I don't sense that mutual interest being nearly as high as the chatter would have you believe. Las Vegas being the exception. I think they're the exception to the rule. They know Jim Harbaugh. They like Jim Harbaugh. That's a franchise he had a really good experience with as well. You could see how that is a scenario. That's a situation that if they put that kind of offer on the table, you know, really enticing, big money package, some greater control than most head coaches have, that they could pluck him away. But I don't think, can't remember which one of you guys said it. I just don't know that timeline-wise that they'll put a deal like that together in time enough. And I don't see any other team being willing to do it. And I don't think that Jim Harbaugh is so interested in leaving Michigan that he'll call up Stephen Ross and say, Steve, I want to come. Because that's how I interpreted Stephen Ross's comments. I'm curious you guys' take on that. When he said, I won't take Jim Harbaugh away from Michigan, I took that to mean, yeah, I won't go court him. But if he calls me, I'll be okay. That's him saying he wants to come. I don't think Jim is going to do that, which is why I think he's going to wind up staying the coach here at Michigan.
I don't. My interpretation of the Stephen Ross thing was like, if I do this, I can't go back home, so I won't do it.
You think so? See, because I don't.
I think it would be extremely. Like, I just don't think he'd want to do that to his alma mater. Like, I don't.
See, I don't think that Stephen Ross would. He might face some fan pushback, but you think a single administrator at the University of Michigan is going to have? No one is going to say anything to Stephen Ross at all. With all the money that he's dropped on Michigan, like, hey man, Steve, you can do what you want to do at the end of the day. But he's not, and Ira made this point when we were talking off that, he's not going to do he doesn't want that perception out there, at least among his people. I don't think he gives a damn about perception outside of that, or he wouldn't fire Brian Flores, right? But he doesn't want to be perceived by Michigan folks as being someone that took him away. But if Jim initiated it and Jim said, hey, I want to go, I think he would be accepting of that kind of thing. But I just don't see that happening.
I don't know. You don't really see the public denial that you're going to go get this guy turned into I'm going to go get this guy. So I kind of feel like it's off the table in any scenario.
Yeah. Stephen Ross is not that kind of, I never got the feeling from him that he understands the kind of power that he has at Michigan. Like, he just, he's the guy that you go to and be like, what kind of check do you need? Well, sir, we need this check. Okay, well, here is this check. Go. And now he wants Harbaugh at Michigan, I think. He's the kind of guy who doesn't want the change. He likes the idea that Harbaugh is there, and he's willing to, if they come to him and say, hey, we need more money to pay Harbaugh because he just won the Big Ten, I think Ross would open up the checkbook for that too. So I don't think he's going to be a problem. And I think his whole deal, and this, I've heard this from a Texas guy before, and I've heard this from an Ohio State guy before, they're envious of Michigan's donor system that they have as little control over the program as they do.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how Michigan has achieved that. It's amazing, but you do have some donors that envy the level of access that their dollar, that donors to other schools and other programs that they have by virtue of those donations they don't have at Michigan. So you wonder if that's something that will be in how much of an issue that will be as Michigan tries to get more out of them for the football program. But I think the overarching theme to the Stephen Ross discussion, we agree. I don't see anything happening with the Dolphins. And I think the Raiders are the only legitimate threat here. And I think that threat becomes less and less by the day, Craig.
Yeah, I agree. It's Raiders or nothing for Harbaugh and the NFL. Something you guys just touched on is really interesting to me, and it's something that I haven't heard much discussion about anywhere. I mean, and that's this notion of NIL and what donors get for that, as a, you know, and what they want for that. In other words, if Texas A&M has a pod of donors giving, you know, $1 million per player, or whatever it is, what do those pods expect in return? I mean, do they want to be at practice? Do they want to be able to wander around the athletic department whenever they want? I mean, do they want, you know, parking spots right next to the state? I mean, what is it they want? And how comfortable is Michigan, for example, with allowing any of that? I mean, and that's not, and what goes on in other places? In other words, when a donor comes in and says, okay, I'll buy Quinn Ewers for $1 million for 1 year, what does he expect in return? Because he ain't getting $1 million of value back from Quinn Ewers. I know that. So exactly what goes on there? Do you have
it's a great question. And because I don't have $1 million to give to anyone, right? I had to ask. I know, I'm sure you guys have had similar conversations, but asking some of those guys in position, like, do you really need a guy wearing a t-shirt saying MGoBlog would love that, right? I'm sure. Right. But I'm just using MGoBlog as an example. You know, you own MGoBlog. Do you really need a student athlete saying, you know, rah, rah, MGoBlog on Twitter? A lot of these guys are saying no. So what do they get for it? Rather than focus on a specific thing, being more at practice or being on the team plane or being in the locker room, I think a greater sense of inclusion or feeling a part of it, a part of it was the nutshell that I was giving. Because Seth, to your point, Michigan has done a great job of creating more separation than other institutions. Now, to be clear, practice access and parking spots and sideline passes are available at Michigan to donors on some level, but according to some of them, it's on a level that is less than or lower than other places. Like, you might be able to go sideline pregame, but you're on the sideline, you know, during the game, or you aren't going. You can go to the practice for, say, Western Michigan week, but you aren't coming to practice for Ohio State week, kind of thing. Whereas in some of these other places, those aren't lines in the sand from some of those other places when you plopping the kind of money down that they're plopping down.
I mean, you're talking to us about the world development, which is not a world I think any of us have really spent much time in. And my understanding of those people is that there's not so many of them that it doesn't just become a personalized thing, right? And I think the difference with Michigan, my guess, I'm not saying this from a knowing, but my guess is that they can, most of the donors are like, you know, $50,000 a year is like a big donor, right? Well, then you have Stephen Ross, and they can turn and be like, look, man, if you complain about this, I'm going to get your money from Steve anyway. So I think that's probably why we have that set up. And I think that that's a good thing for Michigan. I think that if that allows Michigan to be able to do things for the program and for their student athletes. And I think it helps us in recruiting. I think that they use it in recruiting. I definitely know that they use the Texas thing in recruiting now. The having them sing their I've been working on the railroad song, like Michigan says that to people, like people know about that now. So I think that that's a good thing for Michigan. I don't know how that translates for the NIL world, but I been talking to people, some former players, some people around former players, who've been very successful in life after football, who've wanted to do this for a long time, who are sick of being able to like name a bench or name a room or, you know, the kinds of things that you're talking about are not what they want to do. They want to be like, hey, I want a better linebacker in this class than we got last class. And they're ready to pay for that. Now, development people that they talk to don't want to go back and report, well, he really wants a linebacker because he's not getting anything out of that. So, I mean, that's I think that Michigan has to figure out how they're going to work that. They got to figure out who's going to be in charge of that. I think there's different people who've tried to step up and be in charge of that. So that's got to work itself out.
Yeah. I'm curious, Brian, what you is it? Here's the thing. Let's say cost of doing business to getting more people of means involved in NIL. And that's assuming that you come up with some sort of cover that doesn't make what this is, which is pay for play. It gives you plausible deniability, right? That they come up with something which can be done. I mean, the rules have still being written on NIL. So let's say you have some donors that are willing to come together for an NIL slush fund of sorts. Would allowing more access or making them feel more included, would that be a price that you think Michigan or Harbaugh should be willing to pay?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it depends exactly what it is. Like, I don't want that guy calling the plays.
Right.
Like, but I mean, that's a decision that's kind of above my pay grade. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the idea of beating Ohio State would be appealing enough that I don't need to have my butt waxed. Right? Like, you know, like, let's get some guys in here. Let's win some games. Like, yeah, maybe I don't get everything that a Texas booster or a Texas A&M booster gets, but like, I want to win the games, you know? Like, that's what I want.
Yeah, these guys are Michigan fans, right? Like, you're And not all guys. I know some. There's some women who are big time part of this as well. You are they're Michigan fans to start with. And some of the conversations I've had are like, you know, I want to fund that a Madden kid to like always like tell Jim Harbaugh when to go for it on fourth down like that. Like, people are interested in those kinds of things too, right? Like, this is not a it's not just people who want, you know, to be the big shot. There was a great article a few years ago by Stephen Godfrey on the bag man. He talked to like bag men, or at least one bag man in the South for an SEC school, and like wrote about how it actually works. And one of the things that stood out in that article was the bag man was like, look, man, if you want to be the guy who everyone knows, who like everyone sees on TV and everyone sees at the tailgates and whatnot, this is not your world at all. Like, you have to just be comfortable knowing that you help the team. And like, that's kind of that's what we have plenty of those. And that's where I think it's going to come from.
Yeah, it shall be interesting to see how it plays out. I actually think there will be some movement on that. I think it may not be tomorrow, but I think it'll be eventually that you see the kind of donor NIL support that is being clamored for by the fan base. Because when people say Michigan's doing nothing with NIL, I'm like, OK, well, what do you mean? I gotta believe what they're focused on is what they see the donors doing, because there's a lot going on with Michigan NIL wise. I mean, you got big deals being attained by a lot of guys, certainly a lot of guys in football. You have representative groups like Jared Wengler's group, the Valiant group, that are springing up. Michigan's gonna be coming out with their own sort of NIL portal kind of thing, where businesses and individuals can connect directly with student athletes, so they won't even need a rep. So there are things going on with NIL, but I think when people say nothing's going on, they're talking about, well, where is that $25 million slush fund? Where is Schottenstein and Cardale Jones coming together and saying, yeah, we're coming up with this fund that even fans can contribute to, where we're going to be funding players? I think that's what they're talking about, Seth.
Yeah, there's NIL and there's quote NIL, right? And I quote NIL is what we're talking about. Quote NIL is like, they're driving all their bag operations through the word now. And yeah, you're going to have to play that game. I think Michigan's probably played that game. I don't know the specifics, but they've been in there a little bit. But you're going to have to figure out how to do it. I think Michigan is going to come along, and I think that the other schools are already along and are going to go further than they've gone already. Okay,
hey, so Ira,
we're not going to keep up.
Ira, you got a theory, right? Why those schools were so ready to have these NIL programs going, right?
Because they already had these programs going. They were just below the board. And then when this became quote unquote legal, they just took those programs and networks are already in place. And what do? They put them above board and they're the same programs, guys.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I mean, we all heard stories about a NBA player paying a player to stay at a school that Michigan plays against. Let me leave it at that. And when I thought that story was nonsense, Sam just laughed at me. and so, yeah, this stuff has been going on. I mean, some of the ironies of this, though, are, for example, Harbaugh was the person, I think, who sort of suggested the transfer portal and just said, well, I don't know why these guys should have one free transfer. They shouldn't have to sit out anyway. And probably the one school that's been least able to take advantage of the transfer portal is Michigan. Now, maybe Stanford or other Northwestern, I don't know. But certainly Michigan's in the top 5% of being least able to take advantage of the transfer portal because of the way admissions works. And there was, and you'd see this on MGO blog all the time, 3 years ago, that they would say Michigan just needs to start throwing the money cannon. That was the phrase that got used all the time. Michigan's money cannon will solve all this problem once, you know, NIL's in place. Well, no, everybody else is way ahead. Everybody else is money cannon, not everybody else, but the money cannons that say Texas A&M and elsewhere are certainly more profound than they are at Michigan. And so it's sort of funny that these were two things that somehow were either came from Michigan or were talked about at Michigan as sort of solutions to leveling the recruiting playing field. And in fact, it's probably not at all. It's been something else completely.
All right, so last one on this from Brian before we go to a break, and I want to talk basketball and hockey on the other side. But Brian Cook, so we just saw Michigan-Bama. Or not Michigan. I wish we saw Michigan-Bama. We just saw Georgia-Bama in the national championship game. And it was a really, really physical and I thought entertaining back and forth. But it shows that there was a gap. Hell, the game between Georgia and Michigan showed that there was another level to get to. With where Michigan is now, with where things are with the portal and NIL, and any changes that you might see on the horizon, do you think Michigan is going to be able to compete for championships in the years to come?
No. Like, I mean, that's the easy answer, right? Like, I had hoped that the NIL stuff would start spreading out. Guys, and it hasn't yet. I mean, it might still, like, because Michigan's behind the eight ball a little bit, and maybe they'll ramp up and things will smooth out in a couple of years when everybody's pretty much got the same thing up and running. I mean, the only thing it really did is it replaced Clemson with Texas A&M. So the concentration of sheer talent at a small number of programs is going to be difficult to overcome. Now, there are years where, you know, you get into the playoff and okay, it's like it's Bama, but it's not that great of a Bama team. Like they have their off years and stuff like that. And so the problem now is like, okay, if Georgia's gonna recruit like that, you know, if Clemson's gonna come back and do that, it seems like the chances that one of those teams has all of those teams have enough of an off year to put you in a situation where you're gonna be like reasonably in a game seems unlikely. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's never going to happen. Like, you know, even a 10-point underdog is going to win the game a quarter of the time. But I feel like that's probably, you know, the ceiling where Michigan is in a game with a puncher's chance. and they have to win two of those. So it's pretty unlikely.
Yeah, it's unfortunate Jimbo Fisher is a good coach, because one of the reasons that some of those teams were beatable before, in when we had the scenario where anyone could spend whatever they wanted to or most of what they wanted to, was Ole Miss was taking guys and wasting them, right? Like, they would go there, but those guys would never have a chance to win a championship because they weren't practicing, they weren't putting in the time. Like, and that's what you want. You want one of these schools to just grab the kids who are going to go to the place that's going to give them the most money, right? And then just absolutely waste them and not actually have them in there. And diffuse it, even if you diffuse it through the SEC, that's less concentrating in one of those schools. And what you have with Georgia right now and Alabama right now is so much talent at those two schools, it's beyond what history has ever seen in college football. And Ohio State's actually one of those schools, too, even though they had a down year. So you have that much talent in just a few places, it's really bad for Michigan. If you diffuse it a little bit, Michigan can get up to that level, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the playoff scenario, we're assuming that we've already beaten Ohio State, but so they have to beat Ohio State, and they have to probably beat two of these teams consecutively, essentially, after beating up on some Big Ten West opponent. That just, it's a lot of things going right in three big games where you're probably going to be a dog in all of them.
Well, we shall see. We shall see. Start off first with who's going to be the coach. We all think it's going to be Jim Harbaugh moving forward. Just waiting for that to come down officially sometime in the not too distant future. We need to get to a break. When we come back on the other side, we will switch gears and we will talk about Michigan basketball, which is expected to hit the court again coming up here tomorrow. And then we'll talk some Michigan hockey as well.
Clear on the radio.
Man, oh man. So yeah, I'm gonna write about Harbaugh thing a little bit after the show. But man, these agents that I talked to about it, and really it's, as I explained on the show the other day, you know, I want their, like, what do you think? I know what you hear, but what do you think? And none of them think that any team other than Oakland will give Jim an actual offer. None of them think that.
Well, but you only need one, right? So I mean, Harbaugh to the NFL is the same as it's always been. It's the turkey jive talk, right? But I mean, the Raiders are different because Davis is someone gave me a nickname for him. Someone was like writing me this week and they're like, he goes by, I don't know if I could say this on your, we're not on there. Big Dick.
We're on there.
We're still, you know.
But it's not over here.
It's radio rules. Yeah, but they call him Big Dick is like a nickname that he goes by in certain circles, apparently. So, I mean, I could see a guy who goes by Big Dick kind of, you know, swinging some money around, going for the fences, trying to make the splash. But Jim's got to understand, too, that, you know, somebody who's going to make a big splash with him, that first couple, you know, that first year will be fine. That'll be fun. And if they already have a team ready to compete, that'll be fun, too. But they're not going to make you an institution unless you're taking them to Super Bowls all the time, right? Like, that's the NFL does not last as long as college does. Like, if he stays at Michigan now, you know, he'll get a new offer, get a new contract. It's not going to be the old contract that he was on this year. So he'll be able to finish out what he started here.
Here's the irony. The Jacksonville Jaguars could actually be a squad for them were it not for Trent Baalke. His guy works for them. Like, Tom Gamble is Harbaugh's guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been around. Like, Tom Gamble has been in time. He was around leading up to the Big Ten championship. He was around leading up to the playoff game. So, I mean, if Baalke wasn't like wasn't a presence, it wasn't a roadblock, I would be like, oh man, you got to worry about the Jaguars. But there's just no freak.
Well, and Jacksonville's a better job in some sense, because of the expectations. You're going to go into Oakland, into Las Vegas, and everyone's going to assume that that's a place. They made the playoffs this year already. They're going to assume that that's the lowest bar, making the playoffs. And you go to Jacksonville, I mean, Urban Meyer just completely folded and flamed out there. I mean, so why wouldn't, I mean, to me, Jacksonville would be a much, much better place for Harbaugh because he has more rope than he does in Las Vegas.
Harbaugh, I'm sure, would love to be the guy who fixes the big mess created by Urban Meyer. Right. I'm sure he would not mind that one.
Yeah. You can't pay him enough. You can't pay him enough to be in the same room as Trent Baalke.
Back in about 30 seconds, guys. Back on radio in about 30.
Yeah. I did want to mention transfers quickly. Can you do you know how many guys since 2000 that Michigan has recruited from the transfer portal who have managed to transfer their credits over and complete their undergraduate degrees?
No.
One.
I mean,
One. Grant Mason from Stanford came here with 3 years at Stanford and graduated in five. That's it. That's it. Yeah. We had a couple of JUCOs in the past. One of them has not graduated to this day, I think, and the other one graduated in like 7 years and became a doctor.
All right, guys, coming back on radio here. Stand by.
Everyone else a grad transfer or freshman.
Back in 5, 4, 3.
And we are back next year on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. We're live here with the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. And I mentioned last week that I regretted not being able to talk more basketball or hockey at the time. So I want to take the opportunity to do that now as the Wolverines. Again, what was the quote, Ira? Every intention of playing the game tomorrow. Was that the exact quote?
The exact quote is, we have every intention of playing the game at this junction. At this juncture.
Yeah, leaving open. You know, you got to get the health report to see where things are. But guys, you know, it's certainly the postponement of the games. You wonder if they're going to be able to make both of them up. If they do, it just makes that gauntlet stretch. It makes the end of the season more of a gauntlet stretch. But it does give them a little relief right now after this game against Illinois. So how do you see this matchup, and what's your outlook for this team at this point, understanding the holes that they have? Do you agree with the idea that some fans are putting out there, hey, put Caleb Houston at the four? What do you think about that?
Well, who do you put at the three? Like, exactly. I mean, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and we haven't really had much information since, but last year, Michigan had three NBA caliber wings, right? They had, and they were all great defensively, and now they have nobody. Like, the alternatives at the three are like other guys who are fours, and Kobe Bufkin, who's a two,
right?
So there's really not a whole lot you can do except just try to work and get better.
Yeah, I mean, the problems here are, I don't know that you can solve them. And you're going into a game against Illinois. I mean, Illinois has got three fifth-year starters, guys that have been around, Frazier, Plummer, and Williams. Grandison's a fourth-year senior. And then you got Kofi, who is a load. And they, like Minnesota, have decided to go to a six-man rotation. That's all they run.
Oh, you know you love that, Craig.
I do, because I think it gives them the right to miss, and which is the key to basketball, is do you have the right to make a mistake? And it's going to be tough. I mean, they did beat up on us here in Ann Arbor last year, and there wasn't any, and we had a much better team. I don't even know if Michigan's practicing. I mean, have they practiced at all as a team?
They're the guys who are in quarantine. Phil Martelli just talked about that. They're able to come in to the PDC. I don't know how, I think whether they're like five or I don't know how many. There are some guys that have been able to come in, but like full team stuff or even close to it, no, not at all.
Yeah. So not only have they missed a couple of games, but they haven't really been able to practice.
Yeah.
So
good luck to us.
That's not real encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my impression. And so good luck to us on this one. And Illinois, you know, obviously, aside from being experienced, and I mean, they're a really good team. This is a good experienced team that's playing pretty well and has got into a coherent rotation. And we're talking about who's our team.
Yeah.
Who's playing the four? Who's playing the three? I mean, we're still at week one in terms of structuring a team, and I'm not blaming the coaches, to the contrary. But it, they're in a situation where they're trying to piece together the best possible whole out of the parts they have. And it isn't obvious what that is at all.
Yeah, yeah. Illinois is still trying to get Curbelo back, too. I mean, they're still doing it without him.
Yeah, Curbelo hasn't played in a month, 2 months, maybe. Yeah. I don't know what his situation is. He hurt or is it something else? Do you know what the deal is with Curbelo? I don't know
the story. I know. I was looking at the stats earlier this week, and he's only played in 4 games this year. So I don't know what the situation is with him. But like you said, they've been very successful without him. And it's one of the things that brought up to me, like, yeah, when Michigan played them last year and they blew Michigan out, they didn't have IU DeSumo. And I remember thinking they're going to put it on Illinois in this game. And it was the other way around from the tip of the ball. So that's, I guess, what I'm looking for in this game are these guys, do they meet that challenge, the physical and mental challenge? If you miss shots, you miss shots, right? But do they blow you up? And so listening to Phil talk about, you know, like a guy like Caleb Houston, he said, you know, he's not yet confident enough to be a vocal guy. He's not confident in his voice, which is different than even being confident in your shot, right? So this is one of those games where that's going to be challenged. And it's why when we go back, remember, guys, we talked about the handshake line at Rutgers and Ron Harper is in. This is what I think happened. Ron Harper's in Caleb Houston's face. And then you have Musa come over and it's like, okay, what do you want to do? See, I think this team needs more of that. And hopefully we see some more of that on display against this team, because you're going to have it or you're going to get run off the court.
Yeah, let me give you a little bit of hope for the Illinois game, at least, is that in Michigan's 6 losses, they're 26 of 106 from three. I mean, that's under 25.
You're giving hope, Craig. You said you promised hope.
Oh, wait, I am. And meanwhile, the opposition is shooting 50 of 131, 38%. Now, that if you just look at those games, that puts Michigan at number 354 in the country out of 358 in terms of shooting. And defensively, it puts us at number 335. So that, you know, Michigan is not that bad, and they're not that unlucky, because no one is that unlucky over and over. And so maybe they could have a breakout game, at least on the shooting. And the other thing is, Illinois is just a team that creates no turnovers at all. They're right near the bottom of the country in creating turnovers. Maybe, and they turn it over. They're careless with the ball. This is the one Achilles heel of that particular team. So maybe this is a game all of a sudden where we don't turn it over at all, and we get some extra shots on or some runouts on turnovers. I mean, I think that's possible. Do I think it's likely? No, but I think it's possible that all of a sudden Michigan might shoot the ball and things will regress a bit to the mean and opposition shooting threes, and so it could happen.
That's my hope. Yeah,
that's,
you can be hopeful about it, right?
Yeah,
you know, they hit some shots.
Yeah, there are two types of teams that are that have really bad 3-point luck. There's the teams that just have really bad luck, and the teams that have short guards. Which one are we?
Both. So far, yeah.
I mean, that didn't. No, I mean, that didn't. That's that's ridiculous. Like, it's not about shooting over people for those kinds of numbers, right? It's like last year, Michigan had Mike Smith and Eli Brooks as their guards, and their 3-point defense was 84th because they were giving up 32% from behind the line. So that is not a reasonable explanation for the numbers that Craig just put up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more randomness, at least. I mean, when UCF comes out and who's not a great 3-point shooting team and hits 8 straight threes and about 6 of them are crappy shots or 5 of them, that's just bad luck. And it's at some point in time that, you know, that hopefully begins to turn or will, you know, turn around.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it's both.
I got to throw this in there real quick before I get you a hockey take or two from you guys. But I asked Phil about that. I said, you know, you feel like a lot of these shots that were hit, a lot of them were contested, and maybe teams got on a roll a little bit after getting some clean looks. Do you sort of feel like, man, you got to just typically, he said, he said, look, it's not just me being a tough coach and not cutting the guys some slack. He said, but we don't communicate well defensively. We don't identify shooters consistently. We need to do a better job of that. Not all of our guys are communicators, and we are challenging them to do that defensively. I wonder if some of this is positional as well. I mean, you are who you can guard. If it is it the case that when you play big, do you lose more when it comes to your perimeter defense? Is Caleb Houston better suited as a four defender? You know, forget about what advantages he might gain as an offensive player playing a four. Might he be better off guarding fours too? That's another question to ask. But then, as Phil just talked about, he said wherever he plays, he has to talk more because he is not a confident communicator on the court. And I want to be careful in making sure that people know he did not say that in a disparaging sort of way. He wasn't overly critical of the young man. He was just pointing out this is what we're working with him on. He doesn't communicate well on defense right now. And we don't do that well as a team. And he blamed that as a big reason, or called that a big reason, for some of their 3-point defense deficiencies here of late. But I got to get your take, a couple hockey takes, starting with you, Brian. So they were 4-4. Hockey team, when they were 4-4 from the Notre Dame series into the GLI. We know the Western Michigan game was canceled. But then they come off of that in a new year and they sweep UMass. So sort of recalibrate for me. What's your view? What's your outlook for the hockey team that some people kind of, you know, they were really super hype about, and they say, well, what's happening? They're losing some games and now they come off with the sweep. What do you think now?
Well, I mean, so the Ohio State series where they got a split, they were down all their World Junior guys. So honestly, a split out of that, and Ohio State is currently positioning themselves so that they would make the tournament if end of the day was fine. Split against Minnesota, that's fine too. Like they're a very good team, you know. And then the Notre Dame series was two overtime losses. And the thing about college hockey as it's currently situated is that overtime is 3-on-3, which is a joke and not hockey, but also it doesn't matter from the pairwise perspective. If you win in overtime, you get 55% of a win. If you lose in overtime, you get 45% of a win. So that weekend was really a split, despite how it shows up on Michigan's record. So yeah, that was a tough part of the schedule. They were missing some guys. They were missing Bortolo for the Minnesota series too.
Mm-hmm.
It was a situation where there are some bumps in the road, but they come out against UMass, and this has been a trend under Mel Pearson, is that when they come out in the second half, they improve. And a lot of that is because they're always one of the youngest teams in the country. So they have banner second halves, and what they did to UMass this weekend indicates that they might do it. UMass is the defending national champions. They were number 10 in the polls. They're another team that would make the tournament if the season ended today, and they dominated that team. They dominated them for, I would say, probably 105 out of the 120 minutes. And that was still without Bortolo, was also without Truscott. Both those guys are going to be back this weekend. The only complicating factor for Michigan having an absolute blowout second half of the season is the frickin' Olympics, which, please cancel the Olympics. I don't know. cancel the Olympics. Cancel the hockey tournament. I just don't care about seeing the U.S. and Canada go up with like various European guys and college guys. It's stupid. You know, if I'm Owen Power, I'm like, this is, I can go to the Olympics for the next 20 years. I don't need to go now, but he's going. but yeah, they're in great position. So they're second in the pairwise. They're second in RPI. So despite all those kind of bumps, they've played a really difficult schedule. They've done very well against it. And you're looking at a team that, even if they have a little bit of a slide because of the Olympics, is going to easily make the tournament and should go into it as a co-favorite with Minnesota State.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. The UMass series was a masterpiece in some sense of skating. You saw how fast Michigan was, how well they were able to pass it. The games were, I think, 4-2 and 4-1, perhaps, but they weren't nearly that close. They both could have been complete blowouts, and this was against a team that's a good team, as Brian pointed out. Michigan is 6-2 right now against teams in the top 10 of the pairwise, and that's pretty good. I only see them as getting better. Some of the mistakes the younger guys made earlier in the season are starting to minimize. Earlier in the season, they were giving up too many odd man rushes, careless with the puck at times because they're so talented with the puck. That didn't happen much at all this past weekend. This is a really good team and a really fun team to watch. Anybody who hasn't watched them, I would highly encourage it because they're just fun and their goaltending is solid. I can't see them. I mean, if they're a 2 seed in the NCAAs, it'll only be because of the Olympics and missing a bunch of players. Looks like maybe 5 right now, because of the Olympics. But otherwise, this is a team that should be as Brian says, perhaps the favorite really for the national championship. Minnesota State has a great goalie and a good team, but Michigan beat Minnesota State earlier this year in Duluth.
We're also second in the Big Ten right now, and Minnesota just lost their goalie for the year because Jack LaFontaine got called up to the NHL. Yeah. So,
what do you make of that? I never saw anything like that in my life.
They needed a goalie. that was more the NHL needed a guy, and they dipped into their organization and said, this guy's been playing well, so that's what we need. But it hurts Minnesota, and they're only up 2 points on Michigan because they've had a kind of a tough run recently too. So, I mean, the Big Ten top of the standings, there's 4 teams like pretty close to each other, but Michigan's probably got the best shot of any of them to win the Big Ten.
Well, I would agree with that, except for the Olympics. I mean, that could really throw a wrench into things.
You fellas always deliver. You always deliver. I appreciate that about you. Another great Skull Session, as we have every single week. Be sure to follow these guys on Twitter. Be sure to check them out over at mgoblog.com as well. Be sure to join us back here tomorrow, same time, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.